So I want to know which one of you been praying. Very good. So I want to know who's been praying for me for this morning. Hey, this is good. Well, let me just give you an encouraging word. Keep it up. It's making a difference. As I approached this Sunday and this message, I just felt a sense of heaviness and uncertainty. I mean, there was this underlying, I guess you might say certainty or confidence that, yes, Brian, you're going the right direction. And all the while, there was something else saying, are you kidding? You can't do this. You shouldn't be doing this. So I'm trusting that given the fact that my spirit feels lighter this morning as we approach this time, I was feeling better about our time together and about what I might bring. It really helped when Chris shared a brief outline earlier, long before y'all were in here. She just shared an outline from a sermon that she'd heard back in 2021. I said, that's really good. Who preached that? Surprise is amazing, isn't it? We're surprised by what children will say, what the answers they come up with, right? And sometimes, though, it's their questions, isn't it, that stops us in our tracks. A pastor was getting ready to read a bedtime story to his young daughter. He'd laid down beside her on her bed, and he had the book open and was ready to start reading. And out of the blue, his young daughter asked, how does Jesus save us? How? Not why, but how? Are you prepared to answer that question? Well, I plan to share the answer to that question over the next several Sundays from different perspectives. There are four main, what we're talking about are, y'all ready for this? Get your theological hat on. You can say, I'm very scholarly this morning after I left worship. Four theories of atonement, and I'll be sharing one a week. Don't worry, it will not be graduate level stuff. And it takes a while to share this because the church, and the reason there are four is because altogether they are the truth. It's just that the church at different times and places and in their context and the needs they faced and the culture that they were in, it required a little different emphasis. And I'll share those and their importance, those understandings of atonement in our walk. I'll share their importance in our daily walk. Not just for the sake of information, but for your spiritual development, for your formation, and for your being equipped in your daily walk and being equipped to minister to others. And I hope, my prayer is, that it will increase your appreciation for and the depth of your experience of God and of Jesus and what he's done for us when we get to Good Friday and Easter. We're still on this road to renewal. It's simply that we're taking some time to look at why we're on this road to begin with and what puts us on the road. So that's the reason for these. And to tell you the truth, this part of the Road to Renewal series finds me feeling a little bit like Martin Brody. Anybody remember who Martin Brody was? He was the character in that 70s classic, Jaws. It was Roy Scheider's character. Do you remember the classic scene when we're first introduced to him, when he's chumming bloody bits of fish out into the water? He's at the back end of an old dilapidated trawler. And that's when suddenly we have the appearance of the main character of the show. This huge shark, and with massive maw, his mouth and his teeth appear. And after that harrowing experience, Brody turns to the captain, and he has a bit of a blank spare. He's got a cigarette dangling from his lip, and he says, "You're going to need a bigger boat." Well, maybe we will need a bigger boat to not only better understand the question of how does Jesus save, but to fathom humanity's problem that would cause Jesus to come. Therefore, that's the reason I'm going to, pardon the pun, I'm going to give it to us in bite-sized pieces. Just look and see that the cross itself, I wish we'd brighten that thing up a little bit somehow so it'd stand out better, because sometimes we don't see it, but it reveals the immense scope of our collective human problem and realize that that problem is a whole lot bigger than we thought. We need a bigger boat. We may be surprised by the significance of our problem until we remember and consider that the answer that is required to fix that problem is nothing less than the Son of God being nailed to a Roman cross on a hill outside Jerusalem. The catastrophic nature of the cross as a solution reveals the catastrophic nature of our problem. Sin. And sin is followed by death and is complicated by the devil. And all those things that would distract us from relationship with God. That's what is behind Paul's statement at the very beginning of this passage that Dixie read for us. We were dead in your transgressions and sins. Now, that just tells us the result of our problem. The result is that, yes, we are dead because of our transgression and sin. Well, have you heard that a few times? Are you trying to stifle? You are. Okay, Brian, we know about that. It's not so much that we're bored by the subject, but most of us here have heard about it all our lives, because most of us here have been, we've been raised in the church. And I hope that you've heard that word in the church. But let's move on. He goes on to say that the sin and transgressions and sins in which you used to live when you followed the ways of the world and the ruler of the kingdom of the air, the spirit who is now at work in those who are disobedient. Paul is naming the opposing side to God. He's naming Satan, the devil, and those things that the spirit in which he moves and stirs in this creation. Now, because he's spirit, I just want to make something very clear. He is creature. This isn't Star Wars, where there's two opposing sides and they're equal in power. No. Believe me, God is the creator. God is almighty. Satan has nothing on him. And we know that for certain because, well, look where Satan is and look where God is. In fact, ever since his heavenly rebellion of God, he's been, well, he has become something grossly disfigured. C.S. Lewis saw the devil so distorted that he can hardly be called or hold claim to being, quote, a person, to have personality. Because, well, it's so bad that he doesn't, even when he refers to Satan and the devil, he does not capitalize them. C.S. Lewis does it. And it's true that wherever you find sin and where it's had its impact and where it has long perverted and distorted, it perverts the truth, the good, and the beautiful. And it becomes, as one of C.S.'s books entitled, a hideous strength. And as terrible as that sounds, let me make it clear that our disobedience makes us suitable players for Satan's team. You see, when Paul writes, all of us had lived among them at one time, gratifying the cravings of our sinful nature and following its desires and thoughts. Now, who among us has not followed some distorted or perverse craving, led by a desire or with twisted thought? Anybody dare to raise their hand and say, no, I've never had that. No one. I mean, this theme runs constant throughout Scripture, this universal presence and of this problem of sin. You know, Paul, he echoes the psalmist in Isaiah where they say, we like sheep have gone astray. Each of us has turned in our own way. And boy, that picture is quite fitting. Think about sheep for a moment. After all, sheep following their cravings for green grass nibble themselves lost. Sounds a whole lot like us. This little bite won't hurt anything. Oh, look at there. That looks kind of green too. I'll take that one. And the next thing you know, having ignored God for a while, it's by his grace that we might become aware, oh, I've grown far from God. You know, like the prodigal who said, it says about him that he came to his right mind. Think about it for a moment. Have you not been down the prodigal road? I know I have, without doubt. I can remember some specific times when I was nibbling my way lost and then realized the depravity of it all, the distortion, the perverseness, what it was doing to my soul, what it was doing to some around me. And it's here that Paul uses a word that we moderns have a hard time with. We cringe because we've been formed by a notion that, well, you know, humanity's basically good. We'll say things like that. We'll say, oh, you know, I mean, this person's done something dastardly. And we say, oh, but they're basically good. Well, friends, that's not what the scriptures say. It says that none of us are basically good. Paul says, like the rest, we were by nature objects of wrath. Objects of wrath. We've been so long fixated on grace that's available to us, that's been demonstrated to us and for us in Jesus Christ, that we've forgotten God's holiness. And when we're in that mindset, when we hear that word wrath, well, we don't like that because it makes God sound like an ogre. It appears to diminish or even negate the very meaning of grace. And for some, they want to say, now wait a minute. God, you're starting to step on my territory. Who are you to weigh me in the balance?